hard-hitting medical truth, cutting through conflict and confusion to the understanding you're searching for. Join Dr. Peter McCullough, world-renowned medical expert and practicing physician, for this edition of the McCullough Report. Your life may depend on it.
Let's get real, let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. This is the McCullough Report, and I'm Dr. Peter McCullough. Welcome today to today's show. Today's show has a much more serious and darker and also personal implications to the coercion, the corruption, as well as the malfeasance going on concerning the COVID-19 pandemic, and specifically regarding the mass vaccination program. But let me give you some quick updates in the last week of what's occurred. There's so much going on, I'm going to have a longer monologue on this session. One of the first updates is that the Center for Disease Control, it put out a briefing that the nasal PCR test is going to have its emergency use authorization revoked because of a failure in what's termed the clinical indication and use of the test, and that is as a diagnostic aid for COVID-19. What has been discovered and admitted to by the CDC is that the nasal PCR tests have become so specifically sensitive. They were using higher and higher cycle thresholds, able to pick up smaller and less dense fragments of RNA material, and they actually pick up various targets, such as the polymerase of the virus, that it was actually detecting influenza, but turning the COVID-19 tests positive. And so this gives an explanation of why last flu season, there were very few cases of influenza being reported. And I remember the initial commentary that maybe masks do work, and since we're wearing masks, we're reducing influenza cases. Now this stunning revelation has hit, implying that influenza was there the entire time. It was just being misdiagnosed as COVID. So if a patient came in with a fever and influenza-like symptoms, unless the doctor also checked a separate influenza test, the doctor could not distinguish between COVID-19 and influenza. And so if the thought was it was COVID-19 and a COVID-19 test was positive, in fact, that patient who indeed had influenza actually was labeled as having COVID-19. The economic drivers for this are lined up. Since COVID-19 testing is covered by the federal government, since COVID-19 hospitalizations are covered by the federal government, and influenza does not have this carte blanche insurance coverage, it makes sense that a lot of the diagnoses could have been, in fact, swayed to COVID-19 simply because of this PCR test confusion. So this is leading to almost certainly larger numbers of COVID-19 accumulating in the overall reports that were, in fact, influenza. It also has led to this issue that many patients who had influenza almost certainly were wrongly treated for COVID-19. The treatments are very different. This means a patient who came in with influenza, but in fact was misdiagnosed with COVID-19, would have been put into isolation, would have had a very long hospital stay, likely would have received monoclonal antibodies, which have been of no use, remdesivir, which would have been of no use and harmful to the liver, corticosteroids, including dexamethasone, which would have been of no use, and they would have not received Tamiflu, which is indicated for treatment of influenza. They would not have had the same types of antibacterial coverage. Many patients with influenza who are seriously ill develop secondary infections, which COVID-19 doesn't happen, including staphylococcal infections. So this stunning admission by the Center for Disease Control has really been a disaster and is going to have us do a deep dive on a postmortem in terms of looking back and understanding what in the world happened during the convergence of the COVID-19 and the influenza season. Last year in the Republican journal, The Hill, I published a series of op-eds, and one of them was titled, When Influenza Meets COVID-19, When the Two Pandemics Converge. And I was predicting that It was going to be a terrible winter. And in fact, it was in November and December. But in fact, it probably almost certainly was not all COVID. It was a convergence of misdiagnosed influenza and COVID-19. Now, the next major development, again, this is through CDC communications, and this was just came out within the last few days. The internal documents and conversations among CDC officials and then multiple other events have basically come to the scientific community's conclusion that fully vaccinated individuals can acquire, transmit, carry, and then actually infect other individuals, whether they be vaccinated or unvaccinated individuals, with COVID-19, specifically the Delta variant. I was on a call last night for North Central Texas, where we saw a lot of data coming in from community health services. And indeed, the Delta variant is nearly 100% of our cases of COVID-19. This is very unusual. 6 months ago, we would have over a dozen different variants, and mass vaccination has put evolutionary pressure on the virus and caused a mutant strain, the Delta strain, and the Delta Plus, which is the most heavily mutated strain, to become the dominant strain. Fortunately, Delta is very mild and is well managed. So those are critical updates along those lines. We do have data coming in from the United Kingdom variant of concern report, which is probably one of the best reports on the infection and the emergence of variant strains. And I'll read to you some critical findings from that report so we have the exact information. So I'm reading from the SARS-CoV-2 variants of concern and variants under investigation in England, Technical Briefing 19, July 23rd, 2021. Now I'm reading from Table 5 in this report. Now these are cases of COVID-19 that are serious enough to be seen in emergency departments in England from February 1st all the way through the date of the report in July 23rd. And they report 229,218 cases of Delta variant. Of those, 121,402 were unvaccinated, and then the remainder were vaccinated. So that proportion comes out to be 48% of all patients with COVID-19 Delta had been previously vaccinated, presenting to emergency departments. Now, importantly, when we scroll down in the table to deaths within 28 days of a positive specimen, of these cases, there were 460 cases, and of those who were unvaccinated, it was 165, which is 35% of cases, and those vaccinated, 65% of cases. So what I'm telling you, in the United Kingdom currently, we have a situation where 48% of the Delta variant, which is now almost all of what we have in the United States, occurs in fully vaccinated individuals serious enough to come to an emergency room. And of those who die, the death rate is 0.2% overall, but of those who die, it turns out 65% have been fully vaccinated. So United Kingdom is most like the United States. They have a slightly higher percentage of the population fully vaccinated. They have the Pfizer, Moderna, and AstraZeneca vaccines, so they have the similar blend of vaccines. And so America should be looking at what's going on in the United Kingdom to get an idea of what's going to happen here within a few weeks. Now, fortunately, the epidemic outbreak curve for United Kingdom is already on the way down. That's good news. And so hopefully America will follow the United Kingdom. I don't want to create unnecessary worry or concern, but hopefully we'll follow this with an outbreak. I know I was on a call yesterday, and for example, a large medical center in the United States in Dallas, who in the past would have 200 to 300 cases of COVID-19, currently had only 20 cases in the hospital, but half were seriously ill. I'm not saying it's a minor illness, but certainly Delta variant, in terms of its frequency right now is much less than the previously much more severe versions of the virus, including the wild-type virus and the UK variant that we had previously in the pandemic. Delta is a milder form, and so far there's fewer cases of Delta than we've had of these other variants, but we'll have to see how things bear out over the next several weeks. So that was some vital information from the United Kingdom. The next piece of information I have is from the Israel government health ministry resources that is fairly reporting both vaccinated and unvaccinated cases. And so this is for the week ending July 24th in Israel. All cases, so it's all cases that are positive there. They had 5,065 cases. Of those, 4,262 had been fully vaccinated. We know in Israel they use exclusively the Pfizer vaccine. So that accounted for 84% of cases that week in Israel that had been fully vaccinated with the Pfizer vaccine. Now you may ask, well, why in the United States do we hear that this is a crisis of the unvaccinated, that the problem is that people aren't taking the vaccine? Well, at the end of April, the CDC announced that it would no longer track or report breakthrough cases or COVID that's occurring in vaccinated individuals. So in the United States, there actually is a talking point that 99% of all cases are unvaccinated. Well, that's because the CDC is reporting that way. It's assuming that patients are unvaccinated unless there's some information brought forward to turn a case into being recognized as a previously vaccinated case. This intentional misinformation and propaganda scheme has been used to drive an incredible fury of vaccine mandates. And so we've heard that all government agencies will have vaccine mandates, the Veterans Administration, now hundreds of hospitals. And we understand that there are not reported cases of hospital outbreaks. Hospitals are some of the safest places to be. We have not had outbreaks of Delta or COVID-19 within hospitals. So these mandates are really misdirected in terms of sources of outbreaks across the country. Of course, we have the college and school mandates, and I think we're still holding less than 10% of all colleges are rolling out COVID-19 vaccine mandates. But you can see how this is on a collision course, where we know the science from the United Kingdom and Israel, which is fairly reporting cases, is basically showing that the vaccines are failing. And the CDC has had this admission now that, in fact, the Delta variant can be carried and passed to others. I had reviewed these examples in previous shows about how there's outbreaks of COVID-19 and fairly completely vaccinated populations, and in fact, they develop COVID-19 because the vaccinated individuals are passing it to one another. So the next piece of information that came in on July 29th was a message from the Federation State of Medical Boards concerning COVID-19 vaccine misinformation. And so that's really what puts this show in the crosshairs and other important information concerning vaccine efficacy and safety. And the statement from the Federation of State Medical Boards is very serious, and I'll read it to you. It says, the Federation of State Medical Boards Board of Directors released the following statement in response to a dramatic increase in the dissemination of COVID-19 vaccine misinformation and disinformation by physicians and other healthcare professionals on social media platforms, online, and in the media. Physicians who generate and spread COVID-19 vaccine misinformation or disinformation are risking disciplinary action by state medical boards, including the suspension or revocation of their medical license. Due to their specialized knowledge and training, licensed physicians possess a high degree of public trust and therefore have a powerful platform in society, whether they recognize it or not. They also have an ethical and professional responsibility to practice medicine in the best interest of their patients and must share information that is factual, scientifically grounded, and consensus-driven for the betterment of public health. Spreading inaccurate COVID-19 vaccine information contradicts that responsibility, threatens to further erode public trust, and the medical profession and puts all at risk. So this is extremely worrisome because we're in a free fall, if you will, in terms of what is information and what is misinformation. And so I have worked tirelessly to cite the medical literature, cite the scientific data, be as pinpoint as I possibly can. And despite these efforts, this week, my former employer, Baylor Scott & White Health System, slapped a lawsuit against me. And the lawsuit is for a temporary restraining order concerning my activity in the media, including this show on America Out Loud, the McCullough Report. And what is claimed is that I am falsely representing or falsely having my prior association with Baylor Scott & White on these media presentations, and that they have potentially incurred damages. And what I can tell you is that doctors in Texas are not directly employed by hospitals. They are against the law in Texas for hospitals to be directly employed doctors. So doctors are always employed in medical groups or in private practices. And then it is possible for a health system to have a doctor's group under that umbrella. So for about the last 8 years or so, I was in the Health Texas Provider Network, which was the doctor's group within the parent operating group of the Baylor Scott & White Health System. And that was my role. My role was a vice chairman of medicine. I also directed research activities within the Baylor Heart and Vascular Institute. I was a program director in cardiology. And what happened over the course of the COVID-19 pandemic is, many of you know, I took a very active role in innovating and devising approaches to treat patients with COVID-19 with what is ultimately termed sequence multi-drug therapy for COVID-19. And this resulted in two seminal publications in August of 2020 and December of 2020, which published the treatment protocols that are now widely used across the world in treating COVID-19 as an outpatient to reduce hospitalization and death. And although we had no federal funding, we had no large clinical trials of multiple drugs used in combination, we still don't even have any plan. We were able to demonstrate through the best sources of data, through a paper by Proctor and then another one by Zelenko, that this approach reduced hospitalization and death by 85%. So we used the precautionary principle throughout our approach to care of patients with COVID-19, meaning that this could be a fatal illness. And then in senior citizens and those at high risk, that we would apply a sequence multi-drug approach in order to take the best precautions we could. Now, we faced a full fury of opposition stating that we did not have enough evidence, that we couldn't do this. Matter of fact, the American Journal of Medicine had, I think I answered 6 different letters to the editor that basically indicated, Dr. McCullough, you can't do this. You can't treat outpatients with COVID-19. And my response was always, well, yes, I can. In fact, I am going to treat patients with COVID-19 to the best of my ability, given the seriousness of this illness. And here's the supportive data in doing so. And so I brought up the term therapeutic nihilism, meaning that patients were being denied care, and somehow the system had become contorted towards denying patients care and suppressing forms of early treatment. Well, this happened throughout the course of 2020 and early in 2021. In fact, towards the end of January, I was coming up to a contract renewal, which happens automatically every year in Health Texas Provider Network. And I was met one day in my clinic by 2 administrators who told me that they were not going to renew my contract. And I asked them specifically, what's the reason? And they said there's no reason, and they just kept their faces very stern and lips closed. And I make the point that I thought that this was reprisal for my efforts to try to help patients with COVID-19, and that I was receiving basically a personal and professional penalty for my advocacy for patients with COVID-19. This was towards the end of January. I had to negotiate a separation agreement, which is equivalent to a settlement agreement, where prior bonuses and other things that I had were paid. And I was able to make a transition my practice from Health Texas Provider Network to Heart Place, which is a distributed cardiology practice throughout the Dallas-Fort Worth area. So I ended up taking about 2 months out of the hospital. I worked tirelessly to transition my patients and get their prescriptions and tests done in order to make a smooth transition. So I basically just moved offices within the same complex, and I started my practice in Heart Place in April of 2021. So with that behind me, and I had, as you know, launched America Out Loud Radio, the McCullough Report show, and made many media presentations, what really had occurred is a great concern over the course of the year on vaccine safety. And as things started to ramp up, in fact, we had more and more information that the vaccines were not safe. And we've had many presentations on this in the McCullough Report, and there had been messaging out there. And so this culminates, I think, with the same exact day that Baylor Scott & White Health System announced mandatory vaccinations for their employees, that they slapped me with this lawsuit and basically called me into court within about an hour from being announced. I had to scramble two sets of attorneys to represent me because I was busy with my work and with patients. And so what's come out of this now is this very tense situation where I'm under the threat of lawsuit. I'm under a personal and family and professional threat. But yet I'm trying to report with the greatest degree of accuracy and the greatest degree of integrity scientific information that's leading to the conclusion that the vaccines are failing against the Delta variant. And in fact, they're unsafe for human use. And I'm supported by many other statements out there. And so America is coming up to a real tension point in our country. We have about half of Americans who haven't taken the vaccine. They don't want the vaccine. There are data suggesting that from a study from MIT that people are not taking the vaccine are much more medically literate. They're concerned about safety. They're not anti-vaxxers. In fact, myself and 98% of Americans have taken all the vaccines. We've taken our vaccine schedules according to our recommendations. I'm a healthcare worker. I'm fully vaccinated for hepatitis B and influenza. But I have great concerns regarding this investigational vaccine that still has not won FDA approval, the lack of transparency on safety. We're 7 months into the program. The CDC or FDA have not given a single presentation on vaccine safety. We've seen extraordinary mounting data on the harms of vaccines. And from the July 16th open VAERS report, V-A-E-R-S report from the Centers for Disease Control, which is a programming overlay that sits over the database, but basically presents a scoreboard of injuries. With about half of Americans fully vaccinated, the CDC is certifying 11,405 deaths, and this may include reports outside the United States with the U.S. products, 36,117 hospitalizations, 62,339 urgent care visits, 85,635 office visits, 3,243 cases of anaphylaxis or near-fatal allergic reactions, 3,313 cases of Bell's palsy or paralysis of the face. And then it goes on. I'll mention a couple other large numbers. One is 4,381 heart attacks and 2,833 cases of myocarditis. Even at this relatively short distance in time from the vaccine, already 11,221 Americans have been declared disabled due to the vaccine. And I can tell you for COVID-19 and the Delta variant, which has a mortality far less than 1% that's treatable early, I can tell you that these safety events are way out of line. This vaccine is nowhere close to being safe. This is nowhere close to being a reasonable value proposition. And every single person who takes the needle is thinking about the scoreboard and wondering, are they going to be the next death, the next near fatal reaction? Are they going to have neurologic, cardiac, immunologic, or hematologic abnormalities? This is greatly concerning. There probably couldn't be any greater source of tension right now in the United States of having an individual be forced into vaccination, which the CDC says is elective on the consent form, and face one of these outcomes for a situation where the vaccines don't even cover the Delta variant. So the vaccines are not even going to protect against COVID-19. This is where we are today. And I can tell you, as someone who works in a large hospital complex, by early in August, I'm going to submit a request for an exemption. And I'm COVID recovered. I have a well-documented case of COVID-19 in October of 2020. I have antibody as well as T-detect support for my immunity. And I have essentially no risk to others. I have essentially no risk to reinfection to myself. And I know that as a COVID recovered patient, there are three studies by Kammer, Raw, and Mathudius, all showing increased safety events in patients who are COVID recovered. So you can imagine, with no press briefing by the CDC on safety, Americans are flying blind. They don't know which vaccine is the safest. They don't know if the events are really occurring in those who are COVID recovered, or in diabetics, or those with heart disease or blood disorders. Is someone in a high risk or a low risk group for a complication? Americans are given no information on this, and it is basically impossible for them to navigate this vaccine decision. And you know the mandates, they don't even provide any helpful guidance. They don't say one vaccine or another, or one risk group or another. They say simply take the vaccine, and it doesn't matter which one. So none of this makes sense in terms of the program being about COVID-19. It almost seems like it's about submissiveness or coercion or control. But there are deep threats out there to doctors who are really trying their best. And I can tell you, many doctors in my circle are doing everything humanly possible to help patients. We've tried to do every single thing we possibly can to reduce the severity and intensity of disease and reduce the risks of hospitalization and death and save lives. And I can tell you, I think the major groups in the United States, the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, AAPS, the Frontline Critical Care Consortium, the American Frontline Doctors, and then groups overseas, Doctors for COVID Ethics, the Bird and Heart groups in the UK, the Treatment Domiciliary COVID-19 group in Italy, the Panda group in South Africa and now worldwide, and the COVID Medical Network group in Australia. All of them have worked tirelessly. I can't tell you how hard everyone's working right now to save as many patients as possible, as we have a situation where the syndrome itself is not properly or adequately treated, and the populations are basically being forced into mass vaccination. We have only about 13% of the world that's submitted to the vaccine at this point in time, and we don't know how this race of information is going to come forward to either slow or stop this process, or in fact, will scientific integrity and the real beneficence of physicians and other caregivers, will it be trampled in this totalitarian development? But every doctor, including myself and others who have fairly presented information, now is under direct threat. I mean, I'm under direct threat of a lawsuit and then potentially a medical license review. This really has come to a head. I was on Laura Ingraham, the Ingraham Angle, on Fox News on July 20th. And I want to play for you the dialogue. And Laura had a whole opening on this issue of the vaccines failing on the Delta variant, President Biden saying, just get vaccinated, that this is a crisis of the unvaccinated, how even the White House Press Secretary, Jen Psaki, had said that even people within the White House who were fully vaccinated were getting COVID-19. There was no disclosure of that to the press. So you can see the tensions are at an all-time high. But let's listen to the Ingraham angle.
Here now is Dr. Peter McCullough, internist, cardiologist, and epidemiologist. We're going to get to how the strong arm of the COVID law is coming after you in a moment. But first, the Washington Post just got its hands on internal CDC documents that say is leading to this updated guidance, Dr. McCullough. And the data claims that the Delta variant in a vaccinated person may be as contagious as with an unvaccinated person. But doctor, you heard what Biden said today. If 100% of Americans get the vaccine, we're gonna somehow stop the spread? How does that make sense, since given the data that's pouring in right now?
You know, we had four major things that evolved over the last few weeks. We had a wedding in Houston where everyone was vaccinated. We had a Democratic legislator, a plane flight from Texas to Washington. We had a British naval vessel where all the sailors were vaccinated. And in fact, in all of those circumstances, there were cases that emerged of COVID. And now a paper by Fahrenholt and colleagues from Baylor College of Medicine in Houston has demonstrated, indeed, patients who are fully vaccinated can actually acquire, carry, and transmit the Delta variant of COVID-19.
So when Biden goes out there and says, I'll repeat the question, if 100% of Americans get vaccinated, we're not going to have this problem. You won't have to be in masks.
Well, Israel has over 80% of people fully vaccinated. Right now, as of July 23rd, in the last week, over 5,000 cases, they have 84% of the cases are fully vaccinated. So it's clear we can't vaccinate our way out of this.
So, in other words, the therapeutics that you and I have discussed time and again, we have ivermectin being used all over the world with some pretty good results. Obviously, hydroxychloroquine with pretty good results. Dr. Smith's data on that is stunning. Vitamin D, being in better shape, early intervention. If you get COVID, if you're decently in decent health, you should be okay with it. Overwhelmingly, again, that's the data. Is it not, Dr. McCullough?
It's true. We should be always focusing on the 1% of Americans who get COVID-19. High-risk seniors should get monoclonal antibody infusions and the sequence drug approach that I've published on, and really help the world come up with an outpatient treatment for COVID-19. It reduces hospitalization and death by 85%.
Yeah, and the vaccine obviously has some positive effect on seriousness of illness, but it won't end the mandates that they came up with this week. There's no way, according to their ever-shifting metrics. All right, doctor, I have to get to this one. Now, one of the things that's come out of this entire COVID debate is the intimidation and retribution campaigns we've seen against medical experts. I'm talking about renowned experts who speak against the conventional wisdom. Now, Biden himself engaged in a little bit of this from the podium today. Watch.
But I want you to know that I'm going to continue to do everything I can to encourage the unvaccinated to get vaccinated. That includes addressing hesitancy and misinformation head on.
Now, almost in tandem with Biden's announcement, the Federation of State Medical Boards announced today that physicians and other healthcare professionals could be at risk, Dr. McCullough, of losing their medical licenses if they spread what they deem to be COVID-19 vaccine misinformation on social media, online, and in the regular media. Okay, Dr. McCullough, I understand that you too have been targeted. Tell us what happened to you regarding your professorship at Texas A&M.
Well, the same day that Baylor Scott and White announced that it was going to have a mass vaccination program, they slapped me with a lawsuit. And I can tell you, Baylor Scott and White Health System, I've been with them a long time. They're a first-class organization. My wife and I are major donors to the foundation. And I have never gone out in the media or in scientific meetings and falsely represented the organization or Texas A&M or any other university that I hold a position at. Like any other scientist, I'm giving my opinions based on the data. And you can tell I am pinpoint with these citations.
Yeah, so they're claiming that when you say that some of these other therapeutics may be helpful, there are breakthrough infections, which they've admitted there are a significant number of breakthrough infections and spread, that you're spreading misinformation and representing the university. Is that what Baylor and Texas A&M are claiming?
Yeah, they are basically trying to paint me as a vaccine skeptic. And I can tell you, I'm just reporting the data. Fact checkers check me, Laura. And I can tell you, Table 5 of the UK 19th variant report has shown 229,000 cases of Delta. I can tell you right now that 48% of them are fully vaccinated. Of the 460 who have died with Delta, 0.2% mortality rate. Of the 460, 65% are fully vaccinated. These data are pinpoint. Any fact checker can tell them. I'm just giving and trying to help America understand the pandemic.
Well, data doesn't lie if it's just presented fairly. Dr. McCullough, thank you.
Well, you can tell the tension, and while I couldn't disclose all the terms of the complaint against me, the theme is that there is clearly an attempt to suppress scientific information coming out regarding COVID-19. So if we didn't have the UK scientific report that comes out every week, which is really terrific data, or the Israeli Health Ministry, terrific data, or even the CDC vaccine event reporting system, another wonderful source of information, we'd really be lost in this pandemic. We get some reporting from the CDC. For instance, I think our variant update that we get from the CDC, we know the relative proportions, but we don't know anything with respect to nationwide hospitalizations now from the CDC. They've never gotten that together. We do know the overall number of cases, but it's contaminated by false positives. And now we've learned it's been contaminated by misdiagnosed flu cases. And then the rest is just talking points that are arrived at by the administration. So I can tell you, as a physician, at this point in time, I'm deeply worried and I'm concerned. I'm concerned regarding the future of America, the health of Americans, the health of my patients and my family and the people in my circle. And I'm also deeply afraid of loss of freedom of speech, of scientific discourse. One of the reasons why you're listening to this report is the fact that we do have scientific discourse. We do have tightly referenced pieces of work. America needs some trusted source of information and medical opinions. If any of you had a medical illness, you know you get two or three doctors. They never agree completely on everything. There's always a team. There's some discussion, and we come up with a plan. We haven't seen that throughout the pandemic at this point in time. We have a very limited number of people seeming to craft these talking points and then push them forward on Americans, and then have Americans bear the brunt of what invariably is going to be a failed mass vaccination program. It will go down as one of the most deadly, one of the most injurious and costly in human history. So with that, why don't we get on with the show? I have a wonderful guest that I've invited all the way from Porto Alegre in Brazil. Her name is Valerie Crutch, and Valerie is a physician in Brazil who's very well trained. She's at a very busy clinic. I've visited it virtually. And she has been managing COVID-19 from the very beginning with a variety of different drugs. And like many of the other heroes that I've interviewed on this show, she's really come up with an approach that is absolutely rock solid in treating outpatient COVID-19. In Brazil, they have much less of the Delta, and they've been relatively dominated with what's called the Brazilian variant, which is the... it's been renamed as the Gamma variant in the new naming system. But I can tell you the Brazilian variant is one of the more virulent and difficult variants. It's much more severe than Delta, much more difficult to treat. And the Brazilians have used a variety of treatment approaches. One of the things that I think is very interesting, and Dr. Crutch, I mentioned it, but we didn't get a chance to fully develop it. They've actually tried anti-androgen therapy, just short term. Now, we use anti-androgen therapy in prostate cancer, but just short term, and it seems to have an interesting effect. They've also used a drug similar to antibiotics. We have one called macrodantan in the United States, or nitrofurantoin. They've used a drug like that with some success. It works on an intracellular basis. So what I've learned in COVID-19 is there's many ways to treat this illness. The main thing is to use drugs in combination and start early. And Dr. Crutch will give us a great insight on how she's done that successfully in Porto Alegre in Brazil. Her husband's a molecular biologist, and she's got great insight on COVID-19 testing as well. And together, they're a dynamo team. So let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. This is McCullough Report. Are you looking for better sleep, focus, and energy? Check out Healthy Cell, the leading innovator of nutritional supplements for cell health. Most vitamins haven't been upgraded since the 1930s. Healthy Cell has reinvented vitamins with a preparation that allows for much better absorption. It's a pill-free technology. They come in gel packs, very similar to what you would use for an athletic event. And they have Three major lines of products. I use all three. One is for sleep, one is for immune super boost, and the others for focus recall. Today, I'm going to choose focus and recall, and I'm going to boost my short-term focus and long-term brain power with Healthy Cells Focus and Recall Vitamins. They're great to use during the day in order to do facing the critical work that we face every day in our lives. So go to healthycell.com and use the code OUTLOUD for a 20% off your first order of any product. So let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. This is the McCullough Report.
Because of COVID-19, the average American worries about their immune health four times a day. That's 112 times per year. To minimize the worries, leading nutritional supplement company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost, an immune supplement that contains 15 full doses of science-backed nutrients like vitamin C, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea, all in a one-a-day pill-free gel pack. It tastes great, is convenient on the go, and it's more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Supporting a strong and resilient immune system can be simple. Go to healthycell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Immune Super Boost. That's healthycell.com, HEALTHYCELL, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Today, America stands at the crossroads of history. Our actions will determine the fate of our nation. Well, that journey starts here and starts now. We invite you to join us in making the ultimate difference. Subscribe to our podcast and newsletters. Turn notifications on and stay in the know. You'll find all that back at AmericaOutLoud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
Let's get real. Let's get loud. On America Out Loud Talk Radio, this is the McCullough Report. Are you tired of your tired vitamins? Consider Healthy Cell. These are pill-free vitamins that are in convenient gel packs. I like the Focus and Recall supplement. I use this a lot. You know, your brain uses a lot of energy and it depends on a variety of micronutrients and vitamins. Boost your short-term focus and long-term brain power with Healthy Cells Focus and Recall Vitamins. So go to healthycell.com, use the code OUTLOUD, all capital letters, OUTLOUD for a 20% off your first order of any Healthy Cell product. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
In 2008, the amount of concentrated time people could spend on a task without becoming distracted was 12 seconds. 5 years later, it was only 8 seconds, 1 second less than a goldfish. If you find yourself always distracted or having trouble recalling information, you're likely to fall behind in the demanding, fast-paced 21st century. In other words, brain performance is more critical now than ever. Boost your brain power with Healthy Cells Focus Plus Recall. Science-backed nootropics to sharpen focus, concentrate longer, enhance recall, improve mental speed, learn rapidly, and be more alert. It's a pill-free brain supplement made with maximum absorption technology, designed to feed our brains at the cellular level. Take it for a test drive. Go to healthycell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Focus Plus Recall. That's healthycell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. This is the McCullough Report. And I'm Dr. Peter McCullough. I'm here today with Dr. Valerie Krutz. Dr. Krutz is a physician in Porto Alegre, Brazil. She went to her university at the Federal University of Rio Grande in do Sul. She did her residency in Porto Alegre, but got a master's degree in science from the University of Alberta in Canada. She's a trained pediatrician. She has an area of special interest in immunology and infectious disease, and has really been a leader in the pandemic response in Brazil to COVID-19. And her and her fearless group of workers in her clinic have treated many, many patients with COVID-19 with great success. So we want to welcome her to the show. Valerie, welcome to the McCullough Report.
Thanks so much, Dr. McCullough. It's a pleasure to be here.
Tell us how it all started for you in Porto Alegre and COVID-19.
Actually, everything started in February last year when I heard about this virus in China, and then things started to come in Europe also. And then suddenly we start to have in the north of Brazil also some cases in Pará. Yeah. And then here in Porto Alegre, I start to study a lot. In March, I start to study as crazy. All publications, China was publishing a lot. Then it came France with Dr. Raul Didier and all that publication that time. And then I discovered that there was a group of Brazilian doctors in the north and northeast that were in contact with European doctors from Italy and from Spain. And they are starting to treat early the COVID patients because they are in a situation of total collapse. You know? People were dying at that time in Belém do Pará in the streets. No, of course, the reason was not just the COVID, is also they have lots of problem with their health system. And with so many people sick at the same time was a big collapse. That was what we are all afraid in our countries when this all started. No, and then as a physician, I couldn't just accept that there was nothing to do. Okay, just stay home and wait until, like, you have an immunological roulette that if you are lucky, you are not going to have anything. If you are not lucky, you are going to have be breathless and be intubated and whatever, you know. As a doctor, I thought it was my mission to study this disease and study all publications and hear what my colleagues were doing. And then I discovered that they were doing lots of things, actually. And suddenly in Belém do Pará, in the beginning of last year, one specific group of doctors very brave doctors, they start to dispense in a private health system over there. They start to dispense medication, okay? What we call an early treatment, no? And then suddenly 2 weeks, the lots of people waiting for a place in hospital drop dramatically, okay? And then this is real, this happened, you know? Maybe it's not the best scientific method to analyze this, but in the middle of a war, we need to work with the tools we have, you know? And then the studies start to come up and showing that different medications help. And in the end, what we see today is anything is better than doing nothing, no? Then you choose, you study, and everything we learned in the beginning of medical school is for this moment, okay? All that basic science we study, pharmacology, anatomy, physiology, immunology mainly, immunology is very important here. Now it makes possible for us to think close to our doctor. That's for me, the challenge of medicine nowadays, because medicine, the whole world changed a lot. Because, you know, economic reasons, you know, population, whatever, no. And then suddenly I discovered that many, many colleagues cannot think anymore. They are like frozen in time, you know, just repeating things that are very confusing for me to understand, because we know that we can treat, okay? Everybody is going to respond well. No, that's not true, okay? Some person responds different, and we know that's not a miracle, okay? Some people even not go as well as we want, but it's a small number compared with people that are not treated at all, okay? Well, so, Dr. Peter, if you let me talk, I don't stop, never, you know, okay?
So it sounds like you really, from some of the interstates in Brazil, you really learned that empiric early treatment made a difference. What's your lead combinations that you're using now in Porto Alegre?
You see, Nowadays, we have in all these groups around the country, because what happened is lots of people start to study, but unfortunately, some people are still ashamed to say that they study and they treat their fashion. I don't know if ashamed is the best word. Maybe they are afraid, you know, what with what's happening, to be exposed, to have some consequence, whatever. What we are lucky here is that our health, the Brazilian Medical Council supports the decision of any physician do, you know, like our autonomy. We can decide if we want to treat or not. And I think that's the main thing, because medicine is so large, the knowledge is so large, that that's the most important thing, you know. If I study a lot, if I still think that I should not treat my patient, okay. But if I don't study and I just follow what other people are saying, that's not okay, you know. And because the CFM, that's our council, allows us to decide. And I think that's the big difference with lots of countries that we are seeing. What happened recently in Saskatchewan, for me, was really a surprise, because I live in Canada for 6 years. I had my two boys there, you know. I know a lot about the health system, and I am really surprised with this kind of attitude, you know. What I think today is maybe the leaders in the country thinks like is the only way to open their economy. Otherwise, things are going to collapse. And that's the reasoning I do with myself, to try to understand why they don't let the discussion come. We need to discuss in medicine, okay? We need to discuss everything.
Well, that's what we're here today to really discuss. So did your group fall into using ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine or nitrofurantoin? Yeah. Well, Brazil's been a leader actually in anti-androgen therapy temporarily. So tell me what your lead program is now.
Exactly. What we see is, since we don't have something specific for this phase, even though there is some things, but we're not using for the price, availability, etc., then we need to use a cocktail of things. Just one thing is not enough, exactly, because they're not specific, you know. Hydroxychloroquine is very safe and is very old. And it's something that in the medical field, and especially in Brazil with malaria and all that, we are very used to use that, you know. And since use in the beginning, we have lots of articles that show that work, even though it's not 100% work, but work, it makes a difference. And then if we combine this drug with other drugs, then we see a better result. Then that's the reason why we combine hydroxychloroquine with high dosage of zinc. And this is important. Some persons, people end up using zinc, but in a low dosage, and then doesn't work also, because we need in a high dose, even though the hydroxychloroquine is a ionophore, it's going to open more channels for the zinc, you know. And then we use ivermectin, like 0.2 milligram until 0.4 milligrams. Some people are using 0.6, but I confess that I don't use as high. I usually go in this range, 0.2 to 0.4 milligrams per kilogram of ivermectin, and combine with azithromycin or doxycycline, okay? This is for the early phase, and also bromhexin, and also budesonide. There is lots of articles already showing that asthma patients that use inhaled steroids, when they get COVID, they have a better prognosis. Then we should start with inhaled budesonide, even in the phase one, okay? I don't need 800 milligrams, micrograms twice a day, but maybe I start with 400, and if you start to go to second phase, then you double, you go to 800 twice a day, you know? And then I also like to use montelukast, levocetirizine. We have a combination here ready that's very good. And famotidine, and, you know, depend of the risk of the patient. I think your article is very important when he says that we should evaluate the risk of the patient to decide the medications. So higher the risk, more medications I need.
So what I've learned so far is you use a combination. It involves kind of a moderate dose ivermectin, but you move pretty quickly into using inhaled budesonide, montelukast, another anti-inflammatory, and H2 blocker. So you kind of use these combinations. Particularly in asthmatics, that's an interesting observation that they do better. So it's really terrific to hear that Brazil has gotten on, at least Porto Alegre has really gotten on with early treatment. And this gives great hope because we're starting to see failure of the vaccines. And we know patients are getting sick and still need early treatment. Dr. Chris, well, what other final words do you have for Americans? You know, Americans have received early treatment like you described, it started a bit late, but I think we're into a good early treatment movement. What advice do you have for Americans as we work through this next wave of the pandemic?
Yes, please do not be afraid of early treatment. Early treatment is made with safe drugs, and the early, the better, exactly. That's the big difference, you know. And I'm not against vaccines, but I think we need to understand that we need everything. We are in a war, okay? And we need to be worried about high-risk patients. Those are the ones that cannot have the luxury to not start early treatment because they have a very high reason to go to intensive care if they get COVID. Then it's easier, it's cheaper, it's safer to start the treatment in the early symptoms.
Well, we'll let that be the word. Dr. Valerie Krutz, really a leading physician in Porto Alegre, Brazil. Valerie, thanks for joining us on the McCullough Report.
Okay, thanks a lot. Bye.
Let's get real. Let's get loud. On America Out Loud Talk Radio, this is the McCullough Report.